You guys want to say hi all at the same time? All right, 1, 2, 3.
Hi.
And so I don't know what you would like to do, Mr. Krause, if you would like to speak.
Call me Michael.
Uh-oh. You're frozen.
Oh, yes.
There we go.
Okay. Did you hear that, Kate?
No, I didn't.
Tell her again what to call you.
Please call me Michael, not Mr. Krause.
All right. We will all call you Michael.
Or you can call, if you like. Why I was a prisoner, I was only used to my number.
No, Michael, not that.
But we'll stick with Michael.
Yeah. Yeah. So would you like to share your story first? Or would you like to answer some questions first?
That's up to you.
Are you okay telling your story, maybe?
Yes, I will tell you a little bit about the origins and the progression of the diary.
Yes, thank you very much.
By the way, you students' questions are excellent, and it will be a wonderful guide to tell you more details. I found the questions very perceptive and intelligent.
Thank you.
By a coincidence, last night we were at a gathering of a German reading club.
No, it's a German Jewish club. German.
Connected with
nothing to do the universe.
Anyway. So we went through my story till about 11 o'clock at night.
You must be very tired.
No, but I just had some recollection since I haven't talked about it for another month or so. Anyway, shortly after I returned from the camps, I went back to the town where I grew up and started again high school, because during the war, Jews were not allowed to go to school. So I missed virtually 4.5 years of school. So I had a difficult time to catch up. But somehow I decided to write down my experiences, and it was really fortuitous because shortly afterwards I forgot most of it and I couldn't recall all the details. But so few months after it, I was able to recollect it and piece it together from memory. I was living the town where I grew up, is a small town of 15,000 people, far away from the capital. So it of course in those days there was no email or no even telephone was sort of a rarity in those days. So I was cut off from all the main media and events.
Do you want to maybe give a brief sort of timeline of what happened, and then we can go to the questions? Does that make sense?
Well, the war started for us on the 15th of March, 1939. Since we were right on the border of Germany, we were sort of instantly, when they declared war, they didn't even declare war, they simply marched into Czechoslovakia. And since we were on the border, we were so something like 5 o'clock in the morning when the troops crossed the border and camped on the main square. I had an old aunt, everybody was old for me then when I was at that time 9 years old, she observed the soldiers coming into the main square, and the next night she committed suicide. She was the first victim of the occupation. And I still have an image of her funeral, which was a very small ceremony because she was cremated, which is not usual for Jews, especially. Her name was Kate, by the way, Catherine. We were deported to the ghetto Theresienstadt, or Terezin in Czech, in 1942. Well, actually, the first sort of more immediate for me as a child was that in 1940, Jews were no longer allowed to go to public school. So that's when my education stopped. I was completely cut off from boys my age. We were not allowed to have any contacts with non-Jews, and gradually we had to give up all our material wealth, even bicycles, radios, typewriters, cameras, just practically everything. Every month there was a different announcement what Jews are not allowed to do, couldn't go to cinemas, cafes, restaurants, and so on. So we were pretty much isolated from the population, and the last sort of thing was that we were chased out of our house and had to move into a one-room sort of garret apartment without running water. I remember having to walk to the main square to a public pump to bring water to the house to wash. In December 1942, we were sent to the ghetto Theresienstadt, where I spent 12 months. And at first I lived with my mother for about 2 months. There were at least 10 people living in one room then. After 2 months, I was sent to a boys' dormitory in an attic of one of these big blocks of, Theresienstadt was a walled city, mainly for soldiers. It was built against Prussia. Czechoslovakia did not exist. It was part of Austria and Hungary when Theresienstadt was built by Joseph II. And it was ideal to make a ghetto because it was surrounded by tall fortress-like walls, thick walls. Eventually I was moved to a relatively small house with small rooms, but still there were 20 boys in one room. And the nice part out is that one of the boys was a very talented young man, who decided that we need to write a weekly newspaper telling about our daily happenings and stories about life, but also we were trying to look outside to freedom. And as a child, I read stories about Canada and the Indians. And so I wrote a weekly article about life in the northwestern provinces of Canada. And that paper, so to speak, was called Friend, Kamarad in Czech. And in that there were 25 numbers roughly that were published. And they are the originals. In those days we didn't have any printing presses, so the only original existed, which was in color. And they are actually preserved. They were somehow miraculously saved in Theresienstadt, and they are now in a museum in Israel. And it's actually available on the internet.
But in Czech, not in English.
Yeah, but I think there are now English translations as well. That really kept some of us sort of intellectually engaged and was very helpful. After a year in Theresienstadt, my family was deported to Auschwitz. And that really was a watershed in my life, because that was really a great shock to suddenly end up in such a huge concentration camp. There we really ceased to be people. We were tattooed a number on our forearm, and that was supposed to be our new name and ID for the first few months. We were, well, I should say that survival, especially of children, was either totally impossible or a great chance of good luck. And one of the good luck thing was that we came to Auschwitz with that particular transport. There were usually 1,500 people in a transport. I think these were freight cars. There were 50 people crammed into one carriage. The trip took almost 3 days, and that was a nightmare by itself. The lucky part was that instead of going through the normal triage or selection, our transport, everybody was put into a camp in Auschwitz-Birkenau. Auschwitz is a huge complex of various camps. Most of them are for people working in factories. And Birkenau was built of prefabricated barracks that were originally designed for horses, so the fairly spacious wooden structures with a horizontal chimney in the middle to keep it from freezing completely. And everybody slept on triple deckers. There were, I think, 6 people per deck. So it was very crowded.
What was the lucky part?
Well, the lucky part is that the normal process in Auschwitz was that people were chased out of the boxcars and immediately had to pass selection, which was usually done by a German doctor officer. And the main one that's the most famous is Joseph Mengele, a name you may have heard in history books. But we were spared this process so that everybody, including me, I was then 12 and a half, would be unloaded and temporarily housed in this camp. It was called the Terezin Family Camp. I mean, that was the unofficial name. At that time, there was a rumor that the Red Cross wanted to visit this camp, and that's why they kept children and older people alive. They were trying to prove that it was not true that people who are not capable of physical work were killed immediately. So this lie persisted for almost a year. Well, I'm sorry, it was 6 months. And after 6 months, they decided that they really didn't care about a visit from the Red Cross. In 1943, I think the war was not going so well for Germany. They still needed prisoners to work in factories and road buildings, and also they needed people to clear the rubble because many of the German cities were being bombarded by Allies and cities were really in bad shape and needed workers to restore utilities and clear the rubble. So we had to go through a selection, and first they selected men that were capable of hard labor and shipped them to other camps, mostly in Germany itself. Then a transport of women was taken out, and my mother was amongst them. And then in the last minute, some old German officer decided that they could have young boys my age. At that time I was 14, for messengers and light work in the camp. And so the luck that befell me was that I was amongst 89 boys that were saved, and everybody else, including many relatives and my father, was sent to the gas chamber. That was on the 6th of July, 1944. So I guess I was 14 by that time. Is that right?
Yes.
Then the next event in my life was close to the end of that year, when the Russian front was advancing and the Germans decided that it was time to liquidate Auschwitz, and they chased everybody who was still alive and could walk west, and that was in the middle of January, so there was lots of snow in the ground, and we walked for 3 days. Everybody who lagged behind was shot, and we passed on the road many dead bodies, that people who passed in front of us and anybody who couldn't keep up was shot. We reached, after 3 days and three nights of walking, a railway siding where there were again freight cars, this time open ones, not even with roofs, and we were put on those trains and shipped south to Austria, where there was an equally miserable camp called Mauthausen. Actually, the name Mauthausen meant something to us, at least those from the little town called Nachod, because shortly after German occupation, there was sabotage to the fuel storage dump, and it was blown up. So the Germans took hostages and shipped them first to a prison in Theresienstadt, and then every fifth person was sent to Mauthausen, and within 2 weeks all those in Mauthausen were killed, executed, you would say. And that was known because next to Kim got a letter from the German government. So the name Mauthausen meant something horrible to us. Otherwise, we really did not know, when we were interned in Theresienstadt, what the concentration was all about.
How long were you in Mauthausen before you were liberated? That's not the end, sorry. Continue, sorry.
Mauthausen also had many sub-camps. It was kind of a central for all of Austria. And again, they had a network of camps for labor and industry. My group was sent to a sub-camp called Melk, where there were nearby underground tunnels that were built by the prisoners and then was equipped with factories that manufactured munitions. And the reason they were put underground into tunnels because the Allies bombed Austria and the German-occupied countries very heavily. So I was a messenger at the main gate, and I had to be there. There were three shifts every day that were sent of workers to these factories. They went there by train. Every shift brought back the dead who died during that work shift. I was in this little town called Melk for 4 months, and then the Allies kept advancing from the west and from the east. The Russians were getting closer and closer. So they shipped us back to Mauthausen, to the main camp.
Oh, wait one second. There you go. Okay.
We're good.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah? Is it working?
Yes. Yeah, we're good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So you're back at Mauthausen the second time.
The camp was so full that they put us into what was called the tent camp. We were in huge tents. There was really no floor. It was built, it was not, the tents were on a very steep incline, so that when it rained, the water was running through, everything was wet. After about 10 days, we were all put into a huge column of pedestrian and had to walk 60 kilometers to another sub-camp where we, which was without any running water and very, the minimal food was almost non-existent there. There were no latrines. It was really horrible conditions. Fortunately, the American army liberated us on May 4th, which was just 4 days before the war ended, which was May 8th. And it was really high time. I had typhus, and they shipped me immediately to a hospital that was run by the American Armed Forces, and that saved my life. I later learned that my mother has died, and the fact that I was hoping all this time that she would survive and didn't want to disappoint her, that I didn't, that kept me going. I already knew that my father died. So that's essentially my voyage through World War II. Shortly after coming back home into the town where I lived before the war, I say that because I was born in another town, so I don't want to confuse it. I thought that it would be important to write down my experiences while I could still remember them. And that's when I wrote the...
Different one.
I think you're looking at the Czech version of what they've seen, right?
Yeah, at that time I didn't know any English. The original handwritten diary, I'm trying to look for a page that is...
There you go. No.
I don't know how to do
this. So you want to lift it up?
That's the original?
Yeah.
Okay.
Preface. Uvod is preface. It took a little over 2 years to write because at the same time I was going back to school and devoted most of my time relearning or learning what I missed while I was in camps. later on, I sent a Xerox copy of this handwritten manuscript to a friend in that town, and she found a woman who was interested in history of the town and its inhabitants and typed it in a computer. There were, I would estimate, let's say 400 Jewish people in the town before Hitler invaded Czechoslovakia, and maybe 10 survived, and I was one of those 10. There was a couple, men and women, who survived but lost their son, who was about my age, and they knew my parents, and they decided I should live with them while I'm going to school, because Náchod was kind of a regional town which had a high school, and that's where I was designated to go to school. So I lived with them, and that was important because I could as fellow survivors, of course we didn't call them survivors then, that's a new name that was coined later on. I couldn't communicate with normal people because there was no language to bridge the gap between normal life and those who were in a concentration camp. That was one of your questions.
So
I stayed with them, and that's where I wrote the manuscript for the diary. But I didn't want to share the diary with anybody. And that's why it was not published until 2012 in this Czech edition was published. And it was not till actually this spring that it was translated into English.
Why didn't you want it published beforehand?
I just felt that it was something that was very private to me, and I didn't see any reason to share it with anybody else. It was much later that I realized that it was the duty of survivors, as the only witnesses to the Holocaust, to make it known and supply some of the personal details. And I think that many researchers now find my diary important because it was not yet contaminated by public knowledge and politics and being correct. I say some nasty things about Hungarians and other nationalities. And other knowledgeable people said that I should not delete these things, that I should keep it, because that's how I felt when I was a young boy. There was a lot of prejudice between nations, and it sort of filtered down to children as well. It was actually before the English translation came out. There was a German
translation
published a year early in 2015. And actually that was launched in the concentration camp of Mauthausen, because we were, Ilana and I were invited several times to Mauthausen when they were trying to get some events and invited some former prisoners, and I was one of them.
Do you want to, Kate, did you want to have the kids ask questions, or should Michael go through some of the questions that they asked? I don't know how much time you have.
What I was thinking, maybe, Michael, if you wouldn't mind selecting a question or two from the ones that my students sent to you that you would like to answer,
yes,
and then we have time, perhaps from the students here right now, some other questions might have arisen that you could answer. Is that okay?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay. But from that list, maybe you could start with one, and then hopefully the student who wrote it is here and will recognize the question, and they can come and you can see their face. I think that would be good.
Great. Thank you. Very easy question here, if I've ever been back. Yes.
So who asked that question, have you ever been back? Oh, Anna. I want you to see Anna, who asked that question.
Hello. Hi, Anna. Good to see you. Thank you. I have been back several times. The first time was with my guardian, went to Auschwitz. At that time, Poland, just like Czechoslovakia and other countries in Eastern Europe, were under communist governments, and they were both anti-Semitic and anti-Western, so they did not admit that there were mostly Jews who were in these concentration camps. And to them, the concentration camps were just nationalists and partisans that the Germans incarcerated. So Birkenau, which was the bulk, which was the huge extermination camp where the crematoria and the gas chambers were located, were really not on the tourist maps at all. And we had a hard time actually finding this huge complex, because there were no road signs to it. But we found it and visited it, and it was pretty much abandoned, and the local population was taking the lumber from the barracks for personal use. So many of the barracks were already dismantled. And this was about 1968. That was our first trip.
Mm-hmm. Our first trip was in 1963, when we went back to Czechoslovakia and visited Mauthausen, and that was our honeymoon.
Oh no, that was your honeymoon?
Yes.
You guys couldn't go to Hawaii or something? Yeah, okay.
But that was just by chance, because we went
to Czechoslovakia
because I wanted to go back to where I lived. And then on our way back, at that time we lived in Switzerland, and on the way back we drove through Austria and happened to see a sign that we were passing by Mauthausen. So it was an unintentional stop. We went there, and that Ilana is right. We did visit Mauthausen at that time. I don't really remember that trip very well. We then, in year 2000, decided to go or retrace the Desma. Oops, we lost something.
There.
Okay. Got them back.
I wanted to go back to the last death march that I had to go through just before the war ended. And so we took our two daughters and one of the husbands and a photographer from here on a 60-kilometer walk through Austria on the same trip that I took at the end of the war. So that was, since we also were avid hikers, so we combined pleasure and memories this way, and did this trip. I think it was particularly helpful to our daughters because they talked a lot about it. Normally, I didn't like to talk to them about the war at all. So it served two purposes, one for me to somehow recollect the trip and for them to just have a feeling.
To understand.
I think so. They talked mostly to each other.
Do you want to choose a different question? Another question?
Thank you.
Thank you for your question.
Did you want to select another one, Michael?
He's looking at him.
I think that probably the most shocking experience of the war was...
Say the question so they know who asked them.
Okay.
Well, it's actually part of a multi-question paragraph here. Did you ever have episodes of PTSD? If so, what triggered them? And I would say that the most shocking event...
She just wants to figure out who asked that question.
That was Anna, the same girl.
Oh, okay.
It's the same part of this, the same question. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I think it was the night we arrived in Auschwitz, and it was late at night, and the tracks were surrounded by armed soldiers and dogs and prisoners with sticks that chased us out of the closed carriages and shouted loudly, "Leave everything lying, just get out as quickly as you can." And
that's a memory that comes back to you?
Yes.
I see.
Yes. That was probably the worst event, the shock of realizing that that's the end of normal life, much more than the ghetto.
Yeah. You want to choose another question?
When was the first moment you realized your experience in the camps was over? What did that feel like? I would say that there was...
So I want you to meet Natalie, who's asking you this question.
Hello, Natalie. Hi. Good question. I would say that there was no such instant, that it all happened gradually. I was too sick when we were liberated. So the moment when one would, you know, other nations would dance and celebrate, we were too sick. And in bad physical shape to even realize what was happening. So we did not celebrate, and it came gradually. But it took a long time. The first part of the process was to make peace with the notion that the world that I lived in as a child will never come back, that my parents and all the relatives, virtually everybody that was in our family, was dead, and that they will never come back. And that took quite a few years to simply come over, to overcome mentally and realize that I have to move on. Of course, eventually Czechoslovakia was taken over by the communist regime in 1948, and people, grown-ups, arranged for me to immigrate first to Canada and then to the United States to get away from there, because they felt that there was no future for me. So all this time I kept sort of shifting domicile and have to make new friends and meet new people. But I could never, or I had a difficult time to talk about the war. In fact, when I first came back to school in my so-called hometown, I never talked to my fellow students about my experiences, and they sort of instinctively realized that they shouldn't ask any questions. And that really was a rule all my life. I worked here in Cambridge for 47 years for the same firm, and there were very few people who somehow by osmosis realized that I was a survivor. That was just sort of not talked about. And I didn't really know how to tell people about it. I didn't feel the need, because I didn't think they could understand. So I think this covers another question that you had here.
Which,
thank you.
Oh. I was just curious what that question was. That was... Yeah, it doesn't matter. I was just curious. You could choose a different one if you want.
Thank you.
Is she in your class?
Yeah.
Here at the end of another question, have you been in contact with other survivors? Coincidentally, the man, well, at that time he's actually 2 years younger than I, so in 1945 he would have been 13.
Can I check and see who asked that question? Who asked that one? Contact with other survivors?
The first part of that question was, how do your experiences compare to the way that the Holocaust is depicted in the media? If that helps to identify who asked it.
Sarah.
Ah.
Thank you for your help.
Yeah.
Hello. Hello, Sarah. I was liberated in this God-forgotten little camp in Austria just before the war ended, and the boy who shared a tattered blanket with me at that time, his nickname was Misha, just like mine. He was also from Czechoslovakia, and we were essentially following the same route through the camps, identical. And last year, we asked him to join us in Mauthausen when they invited me there to talk to schools in Austria. So this fits as an answer to your question, that but instead of writing a diary, a high school in Indiana made a film of his experiences, and at this occasion in Mauthausen, they showed his film, and that's when my German translation was published. So this is in the text is identical, except in a different language, to the book that you read.
If you want to show it to them, hold it a little higher up. Yeah.
No, that's English. Never mind.
Close enough.
Yeah.